Blog Talk Radio.
Today we're going to listen to the Stone Cold podcast, so I'm going to let y'all listen to it, and we're going to keep on going with it as much as we can. Then if it ends before the show ends, then I'm just going to give you my thoughts on what I think about it. So here we go.
Roman's not ready for that. He's not ready for that. You know, I'm not going to put words in your mouth, but to me, nobody's ready for that.
Right.
And I don't mean today. I mean ever. I can look back at it and say, you think you know what that spot is.
Mm-hmm.
You think you know what it means to be that guy. And you think you know all those things. And then it's a totally different world when you get to that show the first time and it's on you, and you going, what were the numbers tonight? Because
yeah.
If that house sucked, that's on you. If it rocked, that's on you. Right? That's how you look at it. You put a whole different world of pressure on yourself. And then, you know, I feel bad for, I shouldn't say I feel bad for, because it's always been this way, but like, once people see you're going in a direction, then everybody wants to be a part of that. So everybody's thirsty to get in your ear and tell you a different way.
Right.
You should do this, you should do that. You know what? Hey, try this.
And how many of those suggestions are qualified?
Right. Probably very few.
Yeah.
Yeah, very few at best. And it's hard to filter through that as a talent to say, like, that's where it's difficult. You have to say, what is meaningful to me in these suggestions and what is not, and how do I take them and apply them to what I do in the right way and trust your guts. But when you're not sure of your guts, because you haven't been doing this long, and that's what everybody forgets about these guys, you haven't been doing it long, some of them, it's hard to trust those guts, so you start getting this thing, and then you start getting mixed up, and then you start doing your care. Oh, I'm going to do it this way this week. Oh, that didn't work. I'm going to do this. Oh, my God, they're turning on me. You start being your own worst enemy.
Man, when you're thinking, you're stinking, is what a buddy of mine used to tell me, and it's just got to come as natural or organic as it can be. We were talking earlier, and you said, had you won King of the Ring in 96, you wouldn't have been ready.
Right.
How did you know when you were ready?
Well, I thought I was ready in 96.
Yeah.
Right. If you'd asked me then, I'd have said, hey, damn right I'm ready, and I can do this right now. Looking back on it, you know, when the curtain call happened and I got the punishment, and then, you know, okay, I was supposed to win King of the Ring, which we talked about, and then I was supposed to go on to this program with Sean, and that gets taken away, and you move into the spot. You were ready. I can look at that now objectively and say, you were ready. You were so matured as a talent and knew where you wanted to go. You got to that point. You knew what you were, where you were, and how you wanted to get there and go. And you were ready. I wasn't. I'd have failed. I would have dropped the ball in 96 bad. When it came to me later, when I got the opportunity years later, I can look at it now and say, was I 100% ready? No, because I don't think you ever are fully. But I was a lot more ready. And I can even look at it now then and say, yeah, I knew that I had developed much more of the skill to take that. I don't think I would have succeeded.
Well, I'm looking forward to seeing how the story keeps on rolling as we get towards WrestleMania.
That's the thing to me, is like, this is the thing that always makes me laugh, is like, we are the book that never ends. There's always another chapter. So the book never ends. So when people go, oh, they can't do that, you got to do that today. Where are we going tomorrow?
Right.
You don't know where we're going tomorrow, so you can't fully not today, right?
Right.
Because the book never ends. Even when you get to WrestleMania with the Daniel Bryan moment and all those things,
you
get there, but then
there's,
you know, there is no off season. It's WrestleMania, and then the next day you get him and go enjoy the party because you got to get up and do Raw the next day, right? So you go to Raw the next day, and the story continues on. We couldn't see into the Daniel's going to get injured and the way things are going to go, so all you can do is deal with it live and continue to change and move the pieces to where they can, but the story never ends, so, and that's a beautiful part for us. You can constantly just keep revisiting it and constantly keep tweaking where you're going.
You know, I was on the network doing research on you. I watched Night Kingdom Come, the DVD set that they did on you. It was about 2 hours and 41 minutes, and it was awesome.
One promo.
I did it. But it was, I've known you for, man, what, 15, 20 years?
Yeah, well, I met
since
you in
92?
Like 90, 92, 93.
Yeah, and we hooked up and we're
right away.
Friends just didn't know a whole lot behind you.
Sure.
But I look back, and when you were 5 years old, you fell in love with business.
Yeah.
And then it just became your passion.
Yeah.
And I found out, you know, you studying the cameras and studying monitors and doing all of that stuff. And then you had the in-ring career that you had. It still proceeds to this day. And you're going to leave behind a legacy that anybody would be proud to claim. But I always wondered, you ended up marrying Stephanie McMahon, but that was just by chance of an angle. What was your exit strategy from the business? Because the boys always have a hard time exiting the business. For me,
yeah,
need to ride off in the sunset because of an injury. What was your plan?
I think for me, you know, I don't know that I ever would have looked at it and said exit strategy, but I can look at it right now and say if none of the Steph stuff happened and I didn't meet her, and you know, people bring this up a lot, and it's a criticism of me or a knock on me, but and that at first bothered me was, you know, it's hard to, this is a tough business, and then when you get that, and like all of a sudden everything that you've done is negated, and then I got past that, and you know,
I'm criticizing you for what?
For having what I have because of, right? If I never met Steph, if
right.
I never married Steph, I never would have been the
you
guy.
You didn't earn it.
Yeah, I didn't earn it. I didn't any of that stuff. And you know, Tiger was one that said to me one time, he's like, what do you care? What you worry about what they think. You know what you do. You know who you are. You know what you do. If you shouldn't have a problem with it because the truth is the truth. And nobody, none of those people know. And I got past that. But, you know, that criticism being there, I think that if I'd never met her, I'd probably end up in this same place. Not exactly the same place, but I'd still be here. I'd still be behind the scenes. I'd still be doing this work. I had this, you know, it's funny when you start, I think probably like anybody in the business, you start in the wrestling business thinking you're going to avoid having a job. And you go down this path, and then you think, like, you know, like if I was lucky enough to make a bunch of money, make enough money that you can retire, maybe open a gym or do something, right, and then you're good. But then once I got into this and I started to see the back, I fell in love as much with the creative and the, I was fascinated with, it's like, you know, I didn't realize watching it when I was a kid. I thought guys just came out and talked and then fought and then they, you know, that's it. I didn't realize there was this process to it and all these cameras and
the making,
you know,
of a wrestling
the
product.
The making of it and all the stuff that goes into it and the creative of, you know, even now, just coming up with guys' entrances, you know, how they're going to do this, helping them with the music, the set design, and what their stuff looks like, and I started to fall in love with all of that, and Vince, I guess he probably saw that in me, that I had a fascination with that, and I talked to him a lot about it, just long before Steph, and he gave me that opportunity to explore that. I remember, you know, him started talking a lot about writing, and then him inviting me to come to a production meeting, and I was fascinated with that process of how it all boiled out, and then sitting in a room, even with Pat, and the meeting would be over, and Vince would come up with some, like he always does, some kind of crazy angle that he wanted to get done, and like, nobody could figure out how to do it, he'd be like, I just booked this stuff, you guys figure out how to do it, right? And then I just have to sit there with Pat and try to, like, debate and hash out this thing, and you'd get to somewhere really good, like, oh, my God, we figured it out. Like, this is awesome. And then, you know, so that passion for that was as much fun for me as, you know, listen, there's nothing like being in the ring, you know.
Yeah.
Getting in the ring with you and 15,000 people going, banana, you know, and just tearing that up. There's nothing like that. But now, for me, and I can say this with all honesty, like, the jazz of me going down to Florida with these kids in NXT and that system and seeing a kid, the light bulb go off for a kid, and out creating something with them and helping them to develop. And even, you know, my hat's up to Vince for letting me have that and saying, you know, to sink or swim or fail or succeed on my own without having to have that input. And having to have that fallback to go to him and say, what should I do here? Just kind of doing it has been so great to me, you know. And partly, you know, it's funny. There's a lot of times I don't go and ask for things with him just because for me, ego-wise, like, I want to try to prove myself
right
with that, and prove that I can kind of do this, and I don't need that, maybe. So it's, but that jazz of that whole thing of that creative for me, so.
You thrive on that.
Yeah, and exit plan-wise, you know, because I tell you honestly, right now, you know, it's good, but.
You're roped up for life.
Yeah, but it isn't. I mean, I don't have to do it.
No, and I think because you love it.
Yeah.
Your life.
Yeah. That's the thing to me, like when you retire, you know, we talked about this a little bit before, like passion of what you're doing with your days and all that stuff. To me, you know, Vince used to say it sometimes, and he'd say that whole, I've never worked a day in my life, you know.
Right.
Then you watch him, he's the most, he's just a workaholic, you know, but he doesn't, he means that.
That's
he
what
doesn't.
He's having.
He just loves this so much that he doesn't, it's not work. And I'm kind of the same way, you know, I go down to Florida or even here, I work with the kids here and do all the stuff here, and you get so into it, like, you forget to eat, and then the whole day goes by, and it's like, oh my God, it's like this 8 o'clock, and you haven't eaten, and you're so into it.
Yeah. You're talking about Florida, and NXT gives us our first Twitter question. All right, Triple H, with the WWE Performance Center, do you think it's beneficial when talent goes to wrestling school then to the Performance Center rather than the Indies?
So, you know, it depends on the guy, I think. I've seen guys that never watched this product before, like Kurt Angle, who was probably the fastest guy I've ever seen pick this business up,
yeah,
ever, right? I mean, unbelievable. And that's just, you know, because he was a phenomenal athlete, but also just, he just had an aptitude for it. Sometimes you take a guy that's been in the Indies doing that, and it's harder sometimes to knock the bad habits and that stuff out of him than it is to take a kid that's never done this before, maybe was a huge fan his whole life, and teach him how to do it from scratch. It depends on the guy. Some indie guys come in and they're a sponge. Some indie guys come in and they just, I know this is what I do, and I'm not going to do what you do. And this is how I look at that. I've told this to guys before, some of the guys that aren't there. If football is football, but if I'm the Patriots and I bring you in, I want you to run my playbook. You could have played for the Jets. You could have played for the Giants. The Seahawks,
yeah,
whoever it is, and you've run their playbooks, and you know them, and I'm not going to debate styles or anything, right? Japan has a different style. All these places have different styles. I'm not going to debate what's better, what's not. It's not the point, because at the end of the day, it's what fans like or don't like. We know what our fans like, or at least that's what we try to give them, right?
Right.
So we want those guys to come in and run our playbooks. As long as they're open to that opportunity to come in and take what they do, I'm not trying to change them wholesale. I'm trying to get them to do things in our way that our fans love. And, you know, people can say different things about the business or styles or all that stuff. Most successful company in the world, one company, most successful company in the world, that's the WWE. It's global. It is, you know, it is what it is. So,
as a monster, it just,
yeah,
keeps thriving.
Absolutely.
You brought up NXT again, so let's talk about that. That's your baby.
Yep.
And I got on the network, started doing my research, and I had been hearing everybody on Twitter talking about how good of a show it was. I started watching. It started off with the Revolution pay-per-view. Saw some outstanding matches and some great work being done in the ring. So y'all are accomplishing great things down there. We're looking for talent to come here. But that show in and of itself is awesome. I love the lighting.
Thanks.
I love the organic feel. I love the wrestling that's going on in there. I love the promos. I like the way you start the show. It's not always a 20 or 30 minute, you know, promo.
Yeah.
Trying to set a hook. I know you got a winner show, but how did you model the template that you now follow? Because it's a winner, and people love it.
You know, in some ways, I try to do what I would want to watch, and I try to do what I would like. But I also try to listen to the fan base. I also know who that show is geared for. It's shown on the WWE Network, which there's a million subscribers to, but the majority of them are our most ardent fans, are a bit more hardcore fans, are young adult males,
fact is where it kind of skews, right? So I know what my core group is and what they're looking for. You know, at the end of the day, I'm giving these kids opportunity. I try to script stuff less promo-wise. I try to let them learn and let them find their own voice. Let them make mistakes and learn from it, right? I have the luxury of what we don't have here. You know, I have the luxury of doing that with a smaller microscope on it. And, you know, here, there's no forgiveness. There's no, and it's high stakes. The pressure's on, and you got to succeed.
Well, sorry about that, guys.
It can be a little more fun, and it can be clay. But really, the beauty of what's set up down there is, you know, like we talked about camera angles and all that stuff earlier. Until I come here, you know, remember coming up here one time, they told me, look at the jib camera, and I was like, what the hell is a jib camera? Yeah, I'd never heard that word before. I don't know, what is that? Like, the one on the dolly that'll roll by you, right? Okay. You have to learn all that. When you come to NXT, the beauty of what we do in Full Sail is everything is the exact same. Cameras, the angles, the ramp, the setup is the same, so you're learning that same system. So that when you get into Raw, SmackDown, hell, WrestleMania, it's the same setup, it's just in a much bigger venue.
Right.
You know?
Now, is that just still a developmental territory?
So, yeah, because I don't know anybody that's in there that doesn't want to be up here
right.
on Raw or SmackDown. So, yeah, to me, they're all there to learn and they're all there to develop. At the same point in time, though, I think we've created a bit of an alternative brand, and that's what I like about it. You know, my goal now is to put NXT on the road. I want to give these guys, you know as well as I do, where you really learn this business is TV's different. You know, you
right.
got to get on the road in front of crowds, and you got to do this every night. Some of those guys have been indies doing that, but doing what they do, right? It's funny. There's some guys down there, Finn Balor. You know, who, as Fergal Divot, you know, was all over the world wrestling for years and success in Japan and
tons of talent.
And yeah, tons of talent. I was working with him, and we were working on his entrance and all that stuff a month or two ago. And end of the day, he was like standing in the corner. He like looked shell shocked, and I went over to him and I was like, "All right?" And he was like, "Yeah." And I said, "What's going on?" He said, "I'm a little overwhelmed. I got to tell you." And he was really just saying, "I've just never had anybody explain any of this stuff to me before." He said, "Like." In Japan, they just said, go to the ring and do your job. And like,
right.
I didn't even know there were cameras or where they were or what we were supposed to do. You know, it's a whole other world.
What is the creative process down there? Because when I came to WWE, they wanted to call me the ringmaster. And I talked with Vince on the phone. He gave me the infamous sales pitch. You know, bad idea, but it was an opportunity. And that's what he says he always gives, an opportunity. I turn it into Stone Cold. When you came, they brought you in as the Blue Blood.
Yep.
Hunter Hearst Helmsley. So, and it was a work in progress.
Yep.
You evolved into the mean, tough Triple H guy.
Yeah.
And that process, that evolution, no pun intended.
I'd get over it.
So what is the process with the kids down there? Do they have a design on anything? Can they pitch things to you?
Absolutely.
What is the creative process?
They're massively part of the process. And that's the thing down there. It's a whole system. When I say developmental, too, it's developmental for everything. You know, we're teaching camera guys, we're teaching lighting. Look at some of these guys. Look how old they are. Look at them. They're not going to make it long,
yeah.
Right? We got to train some younger guys now. You know, so we're training everything, but those kids are all a part of the process. Dusty Rhodes down there working on them with promos, and we're working with them in the ring. I'm constantly watching. I have a feed in my office to the performance center, and I can watch everything they do. So if somebody's doing something new, they want to show me something. They, you know. I can take a look at it, buying that, I'm not
right.
buying that, that works, try that, this is different, like, right? You get a lot of input, but a lot of it's got to be from them, because if they don't buy it, if they don't believe in it, if they don't wholeheartedly, I don't want anybody that's playing wrestler,
right?
You got to believe it, you got to buy it. Nobody ever walked out and saw Stone Cold go to the ring and said, that guy's just playing tough guy.
No, you have to believe in
yeah.
yourself 110% to be, in my opinion, someone that will draw money to become a big star. And speaking of big stars, we got another Twitter question which pertains to this exact subject matter. Triple H, do you see anyone on the current roster that has what it takes to be the next
John Cena, Hulk Hogan, Steve Austin, BSR. I'd seen a lot of guys that I think have, you know, I don't want to sound like Vince, not that that's a bad thing, but like where he's a boy, I hope that guy gets over. But there's a lot of that. You see a guy and you go like, oof, man, that's, he got something, man. And that to me is the biggest thing, is that X factor where you go, something on that guy, right? And then that, there's, he's got that it factor. Or girl, you know.
Right.
I see that with them too. And then, but it's what they do with it, right? And the business is different now. You can't just be a promo guy. You can't just be an in-ring guy with no promo. You can't be an in-ring guy with a decent promo but no personality.
Right.
You've got to be a little
bit. You can't just be a big guy.
You can't just be a big guy.
Yeah.
You can't just be a flip-flop and fly guy.
It's like you said, it's all pieces of the puzzle, and you're trying to put this puzzle together. The more pieces you have,
the clearer the picture.
The clearer the picture is. But that being said, to get to the ultimate level, there's a lot of guys that are putting puzzles together, and it's not the best puzzle that could be put together in respect to drawing,
yeah,
being on top.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong, there's some pretty pictures out there, but not all of them are masterpieces,
yeah,
which are going to be headlining WrestleMania after WrestleMania.
Yeah. No. I 100% agree with that, but also there's only so far that you can lead a talent, right? You can look. I'm gonna give you the Taker as the example to me. Vince, you know, that was Vince's concept and creation.
Yeah.
Right, and takes it to you know, Mark, and you could have gave that Undertaker character 100 different guys, and they would have all died a miserable death in that character.
I agree,
right?
Yeah.
But Mark did what probably nobody else on the planet could do. He took a concept and an idea, put it to himself, and became that, and just took it to something that probably nobody would have ever imagined it being. And even today, when you say that character and you say, well, you know, what it is, it's almost. You know,
yeah,
but it's still the most awesome character probably that there has ever been, bar none, in the business. That's on him. You know, there's only so far you can lead that horse, and at some point in time, you got a drink on his own. And I think when Vince is saying he's waiting for those guys to grab the brass ring, you start to move them down a road, or you start to get them to certain places, and there's things they do, and there's things they do well. But when it comes to getting that over the hump thing, man, it's on the guys.
I got bombarded with emails, people asking, what about the brass ring? Because it seems like, someone actually said, it seems like they're handing the brass ring to Roman Reigns.
Oh,
was it handed to him? Or they're dangling it from someone else. They're dangling it from, sometimes a Daniel Bryan or a Dolph Ziggler.
Yeah, here's the thing to me. So when I hear this said sometimes, like, oh, well, that guy worked so hard. Everybody here works hard. All the boys work hard. And I can tell you this. I met Roman when I very first took over developmentally. Just got started there. Bust his ass. And anything he's given, whether, you know, perception is it's being pushed on him, whatever that is, he works as hard as anybody else does and deserves everything that he is, no better than everybody else. This business is not about deserve. Work hard.
Right.
This business is not about, well, he worked hard, so he should be given a chance. And then what it's about. And you know that. I know that. Nice guy, it's got nothing to do with it. Work hard, got nothing to do with it. Is it a part of it? Absolutely. Should the guy on the top work harder than everybody else? I believe so. I believe there's two ways you go when you get to the top. Some guys look at it and they go, like, well, now I can slack off because I'm the guy and I got
right.
a stroke. Or work harder than everybody else.
Yeah.
John Cena can get criticized all day long. Hardest working guy.
Agreed.
First in, last to leave, will do anything. You know, couldn't be a more dedicated guy in the business. Can you criticize certain things? Absolutely. Tell me anybody who's ever perfect in the business. Did everything right.
I was thinking about some of our matches way back in the day. I remember on the tour in Germany, you and I were working. China was your bodyguard.
Yeah.
I went over. Y'all get... China comes in the ring, wham, hits you with a stunner, wham, hit China with the stunner. Well, somebody didn't like that. as someone jumped in the ring who was one of the fans. And I'm laying on my stomach, blowed up, sky high. It starts beating the hell out of me. Now I'm thinking I'm just laying there taking a punch. Since I'm a baby face, I'm not going to fight back. And back overseas, a lot of times the boys would play ribs and do just an impromptu run-in. Well, it was actually a fan beating me up. And so you got up and suplexed the dude off of me and started punching the daylights out of it, yelling for the security to come in and get the guy out of the ring.
That guy was like, well, he's like 6'8", like, what, he's like 300 pounds. Dude, he's jacked. Like,
dude, he's about 5'6", and he's beating the tar out of me.
Just come on to my guest here.
Yeah, my story. The dude was 6'8", he's all at 320. I brought up China.
Yeah.
Man, she had a hell of a run here.
Absolutely.
Will she ever go into the Hall of Fame?
You know, that's one of those questions. Does she deserve to go in the Hall of Fame?
Absolutely.
Well,
so what do you mean it's one of those questions?
Well, it gets asked a lot.
Yeah.
It's
I thought it meant like a double-sided edge.
Well, it is a little bit of a double side. So you have it's not just as easy as should this person go in the Hall of Fame. Completely 100% transcended the business, changed the business, paradigm shifter of the business, right? Did what no woman ever did before, and was awesome at it, and a phenomenal talent. All the other stuff that happened, and I don't need to get into any of the other stuff, right? But there is no beef on this side with anything, and I mean that 100%. And from a career standpoint, should she be in the Hall of Fame? Absolutely. Bit difficult though, and this is the flip side of the coin that nobody looks at. You have I got an 8-year-old kid. My 8-year-old kid sees Hall of Fame, and my 8-year-old kid goes on the internet to look at, it's China. I never heard of her. I'm 8 years old. I've never heard of that. So I go type that in, and I punch it up, and what comes up? And I'm not criticizing anybody. I'm not criticizing lifestyle choices. Everybody has their reasons. I don't know what they were, and I don't care to know. And it's not a morality thing or anything else. It is just the fact of what it is. That's a difficult choice.
Right.
The Hall of Fame is a funny thing in that it is not as simple as, this guy had a really good career, legendary career. He should go in the Hall of Fame. Yeah. But we can't because of this reason.
Right.
We can't because of this legal instance. We can't because of this. Clearly, you can't. You call the guy and say, we'd like to put you in the Hall of Fame. He goes, yeah, no. Okay, all right. it's different than any Hall of Fame in the world, you know. And at the end of the day, it's also, it's for our fans. And that's why it has been such a deal for me in the last few years to go back. And I'm such a big fan of the history of the business. And it's my, and I'm really big into that. And to go back and get Bruno. To go back and get Warrior, especially during the circumstance of how it all went down.
But you're mending fences,
yeah,
or bridges that were burned down by those talent or events, whatever.
By whoever.
Relationship.
Yeah, and like with Bruno, you know, I went to Vince one day because I just always felt it was wrong that he wasn't in there. And I just went to Vince one day and I was like, hey, what do you think about Bruno? And he's like, great, should be in there, you know. And I said, never happened. I said, wait, you okay if I call
him? Was
that
much heat between them?
No, Vince wasn't angry, but I think he just thought Bruno was so angry. And
what was Bruno angry about?
They had a falling out over a lot of things over the years, and then he didn't agree.
Well, that
with,
never happened.
Yeah, and then he didn't agree with where the business went, and you know, and they just had a lot of bad blood, and you know, and then it's like it just kind of goes. I think you're mad at me, and then you think I'm mad at
right.
you. So we never talk about it, and we never.
Oh, that's so bad in this business.
It is. It's terrible, and it's because everybody's apart. And they build things up in their minds. It's horrible. This guy's swerving me, and it's the conspiracy theory, and you know. And when I went to Vince to ask him about Bruno, he was like, "You call him if you want. You want to waste your time? Ain't never gonna happen." I worked on that.
What was tougher, getting Bruno in or Warrior? I mean, just getting them back on page with Vince.
Well, they both have their challenges, you know, and it was a lot of listening and a lot of just, I don't think that's how it really, the feeling is this. You know, it was just, Warrior was different because Bruno and I didn't, I'd had one time I'd spoke to Bruno ever in my life, and I called him cold. And then we just started to have conversations. And You know, when you're his age, it's a trust issue, and he had to learn to, she didn't know me, and he had to learn to trust me in a business that long ago didn't have a whole lot of guys that you could trust, and he had to learn to trust me, and, you know, he said it at the end, he never once lied to me about any of this, and Warrior was different because we didn't have a trust.
Right.
We had a bad, he was in that don't trust anybody category, without a doubt, and, you know, it's also funny, you know, he and I both said as we went through the process, you live and you learn and you grow. The day you stop growing, the day you stop learning and growing, you're done, right? I was in a different place as a person when I was in WrestleMania with him, which people bring up a lot to me as like a, as if it's a sore spot in my career. It wasn't. I had a bad personal experience with a guy at the moment, but it was one of the coolest moments of my life. Vince McMahon came to me prior to WrestleMania 12 and said, hey, no one knows this yet, but the Ultimate Warrior is going to come back and I'd like you to work with him at WrestleMania. My first WrestleMania was with the Ultimate Warrior. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, it was a mind-bogglingly awesome opportunity for me and was still awesome experience. But he and I had a rub then. And so, and then, you know, and then over the years things are said, right, and all that stuff. And so we had to get past that for ourselves, and then we had to get past a whole lot of stuff with him and Vince, and he was a unique cat,
right?
And then, but, you know, as I stayed open to that process, I realized he was a lot misunderstood. A lot of his anger and his
passion and aggression. Yeah, and
he didn't know how to communicate.
Yeah, that was one of my biggest issues, and the rift, and all of a sudden when I go in that DTA mode, it turns into a cluster, and I know he was full of that, and just a few of the conversations that I had with him, but he seemed like a sweetheart of a guy.
And he just couldn't let it go.
Right.
You know, get past it,
right,
and then he couldn't let it go.
Hey, who do you think was more influential in the business, NWO or DX?
I think that If I said what was influential, the NWO at first was massively influential in that it kind of took this reality slant of the business with Kevin and Scott going over there and it looking like it was this invasion and Hogan jumping in with them. But the massive impact that they had quickly dissipated because they put a bunch of guys in there and it got watered down and it fell apart. So it was massively influential, but it didn't last long. If I had to say over time, DX probably did more things in the various incarnations over a long period of time to influence, you know, the way we did things and were able to take stuff in the business, not take it seriously, but make it serious.
Right.
You know, goof on something, but yet make it into something you wanted to fight about. And I think that changed stuff over the course of time more. But the NWO was, at first, just, you know, it shifted the business.
If you could go back in time and have a match with anybody you wanted to, who would you pick?
Buddy Rogers.
Why?
It's funny because a lot of guys will probably go home tonight and have to Google Buddy Rogers. And I know you're kind of a fan of that time and that era, too, but he was the first guy to be in the business, and I'm a big buff of the history and stuff. He was the first guy that transcended, like, he wasn't just a shooter. He wasn't just, you know, like it was. He had this look, and then he had the way he carried himself. He wasn't the biggest guy, but he had this way about him, and he was tan, and he had the hair, and he talked the talk, and he walked the walk, and he had the strut, and he did this stuff. But, man, he could tell, you know, you hear stories about guys all the time, but Buddy was a guy, if you walked to the ring one way, he was a bad guy. He walked to the ring another way, he was a good guy. He could manipulate the crowd. He had that larger-than-life thing going where he just wasn't, you know, a lot of the guys prior to that were just wrestlers. And they were just like a Luthez, or I don't mean that as a knock to them. They just, the personality was different. He was the first larger-than-life, like, man, he was a character.
Well, I want to go into some word association. Before I do, I mean, you mended fences for Vince with Bruno, with Ultimate Warrior, and you're just a guy that seems very composed and doesn't either burn bridges or hold a grudge. That being said, I got a lot of emails asking about your opinion of CM Punk. He didn't have the greatest things to say for you on a podcast a couple of months ago. What is it with you guys? Are you cool with him? Do you have your feelings hurt? What?
No, you know, it's funny. I remember hearing things about him when he was first coming in, or I actually think he might have been in OVW at the time. And, like, I remember hearing people say, oh, you know, the big thing is you hate this CM Punk kid and you were burying him and something like that. Honestly, I didn't mean this as a knock to him. I didn't even know who he was. You know, we didn't have time then to watch other stuff and watch other, you know, components of the business. I don't think I'd ever seen him or knew who he was. And I was like, I don't know how I hate this guy. I've never even seen him. I don't remember
when he went out here in WWE.
And then when he came in here, I think somehow that got carried over. I don't know, to be honest.
Right.
I've never had a beef with him. I never have. You know, and then when we got further in and we worked together, whether it was, when he first did the thing where he walked out, dropped the pipe bomb and the whole thing. We did this storyline and the Nash was brought in. And you know, it was done for the right reasons, right? I think it was done to get us into him. And get him more over, but we the decisions that were made were Vince's and were made to help him, and then they didn't work out for whatever reason. Nash couldn't hang and couldn't be here, but I don't know, you have to grudge on that, and he's a weird cat. Like, I don't mean that as a knock, but I mean that as a, it's hard to get to know. He doesn't talk, he doesn't communicate well. I would hear from everybody in my role now as talent relations and all that. I would hear to everybody that, oh my God, he's livid today. He's quitting. He's this. He's that. And I'd go to him and say, what's going on? And I'd get,
right.
Fine, you know? And, okay.
So, could he ever come back here?
One guy to ask on that, but never say never. You know, listen, Bruno's was here. Everybody's, Hogan's been here. You know, if the thing is, if the fans want it, if the WWE Universe wants it, if that's what's best for business, and I don't mean to sound that like it's a, you know, the cliche, but it's really what's in the best interest of everybody's here. If we can get past it, it's my regret that we couldn't get past all this stuff with him. But if he didn't want to be here anymore, if this wasn't his passion anymore, then he shouldn't be here. You can't do this job if you don't love it. You can't.
Agreed. Let's move on. Word Association, I'm going to throw out some names for you. Just give me a quick opinion. Shawn Michaels.
Greatest in-ring performer ever.
That's what I said. Ric Flair.
Greatest all-around performer, character and everything, all around.
100% agree with you. I've got the same answer on both those. Kevin Nash.
Kevin Nash, to me, very underrated mind for the business.
Yeah, great mind for the business.
Awesome mind for the business. He just, it's sometimes hard to get past his personality of whether he likes you, doesn't like you, and he's very blunt with people, so he just says what he says, and then if you don't like it, too bad.
Scott Hall.
Probably the guy I learned more from walking in the door here than anybody, and one of the most underrated performers in ring, I think. Just an awesome psychologist.
Eddie Guerrero.
Awesome. I miss him. Huge. Was so fun when he would just let go and be Eddie and not be caught in his own mind of insecurities, and you could get him to just let go and be Eddie, man.
Watching him in the ring was magic. It was the little things that he did that meant so much. And if you know what to look for, you knew that.
Unbelievable.
Goldberg.
Goldberg, a guy that I would credit a lot with, in some ways, changing that intensity of the business. He had an intensity about him that was just, it's what made people just go like, oh my God, look
explosive.
At that.
Explosive,
right? Yeah, just that explosive intensity that you just, and I think he kind of started to cross that line of like, oh, like outside athlete kind of thing. That's cool, as opposed to just being a tough guy or something.
Brock Lesnar.
Freak. Yeah.
Leave it at that. And that's in a positive regard.
Oh, my as positive as I can. Yeah. I've just never experienced anything like it.
He's white hot right now.
Yeah.
And he's right where he needs to be. Paul Heyman.
Yeah.
The Advocate.
And there's a fine line between crazy and genius. He rides that line like a razor blade.
Dude, you put him on, just let him talk. I'm never going to change the channel.
Absolutely.
Owen Hart.
One of the nicest guys I knew and one of the funniest guys I knew. Again, a tragic situation. Owen was one of those guys to me that was so good in the ring that he could purposely tell you, like, I'm going to go stick the joint out, and then go out there and have the worst match I've ever seen in your life.
He did that a lot.
Oh, my God.
It was great when you could watch it, but when he was doing it with you, he did that with me a couple times, I was madder than a hornet.
Oh, my God.
He used to piss me off.
Yeah.
Bret Hart.
Bret Hart, unbelievable technician. Maybe sometimes he takes himself too seriously.
Man, that guy, I got so much respect for him. He truly lived. He lived like you were talking a while ago. You've got to believe 100%.
And
he did. Best there is, was, ever will be.
Absolutely.
And he believed that. And he lived it.
And in the ring, unbelievable.
I know you got one word for this. Undertaker.
Respect.
Kane.
Underrated and just, if I had to say one word, he's the constant.
I was going to say solid.
Just the constant. Yes. And he just here, always great, always, just constant, solid.
Pat Patterson.
Wow. Genius business. No, I respect Pat so much. Like one of the guys that when I got in here and there was a lot of, between the Cheeks and the Gorilla, the Cheeks and the George Steeles and all these guys, Pat was the guy that just like every time he opened his mouth, I was like, oh my God, it's like the smartest thing ever.
Yeah, Michael Hayes,
so underrated for his contributions to the business, just across the board.
Man, I'm telling you, I was down here in Denton, Texas, playing football at North Texas State University when Freebirds came in town to beat up the Von Erichs. I paid my money to go see those guys, and I don't know. That's Hall of Fame right there. I mean, to me, Dallas, I'm just throwing something out there. I mean, I paid my money to see that guy. You know I'm a hardcore pro wrestler. Before I don't want to go on, pro wrestler and sports entertainment, because there's a big disconnect with you and Vince. I'm a pro wrestler. I was. Where are you? Well, here's the difference.
I understand the distinction between the two, and I also understand the distinction of WWE superstar, pro wrestler. I love wrestling. Right? It's what we do. At the end of the day, we get in the ring and we wrestle. It's what we do. And I love it, and I can scientifically break it down, and man, it's the greatest thing in the world sometimes for me to watch that. Also, though, I understand that's limiting. Anybody can play football. You play football in Pee Wee League, you play football junior high, but very few people ever make it to the NFL. You can be a wrestler, you can be a this, you can be a that. Making it to the WWE is different. That's the distinction between being a WWE superstar. Very few guys in the world get to ever say that. And the sports entertainer part of it is because to the general world, outside of people that go, I love pro wrestling, got to explain to them what it is because they don't know.
Before we wrap up, it's rumored that Brock Lesnar's contract is up after WrestleMania. What is his status? I know he's white hot right now.
Yeah, so we're constantly talking to Brock. It all comes down to Brock, I think, on what Brock Lesnar wants to do, right? And I think in somewhere in his mind, he maybe is not sure if he has unfinished business or not.
Right.
I think he loves what he's doing here right now. I think he loves the arrangement. We have a great working relationship.
It works.
It's, yeah.
100%. I'd like to see him more, but to Vince's point, it does keep him special because
Absolutely. When
he comes out and raises hell,
that's
incredible.
It's awesome, and he is. And, we love having him here, but it just comes down to does he have unfinished business?
So let's talk about this last thing. Let's talk about the streak. Should it have been broken, or should it have remained?
Boy, that's a debate, right? I mean, I don't know. I can look at it both ways, and I can see the value of both. In some ways, I look at it and I go, man, it's the home run record that just should never be broken, and it's this living, breathing thing that you just man, it lasts forever. And then on the other side of that,